Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Myrna, you look dreadful. Her friend Pat slammed the car door shut and slid the seatbelt over her shoulder. What's wrong? Myrna sighed. I just dropped Derek off at the health club and I began thinking about his daily routine. He's just gotta have a job. That's reasonable, Pat began. Has he begun looking? Oh, dear, that's the trouble. Myrna's voice began to tremble. No one wants to hire a special needs kid when he's all grown up. From a parent's perspective, how can we help grown-ups with special needs find a place in the working world? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has visited with Parents' Perspective before. Sarah Portman Milner is the co-founder of Sunflower Bakery, the mission of which is to prepare individuals with developmental or other cognitive disabilities for gainful employment through on-the-job training in the baking industry. In addition to her work with the bakery, Sarah is the consultant for Special Needs and Disability Services at the Partnership for Jewish Life and Learning in Rockville, Maryland. A social worker by training, Sarah has been a nationally recognized champion for inclusion of children and adults with disabilities in all aspects of community life. Working toward this end for the past 36 years in the D.C. area, she created, developed, and implemented a model inclusion program for summer camps and recreation centers that has been replicated around the country and even overseas. She has trained generations of campers and camp staff to embrace differences and to accept all children, valuing every child's uniqueness. Now, her focus has turned to those children who are grown and all the other adults who are striving to be just another thread in the fabric of our society. She's the mother of three adult children and grandmother of six. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Sarah.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here.
You began a project you called the Sunflower Bakery to train and employ young adults with developmental or other cognitive disabilities. What was the actual impetus for that?
Over so many years of including children in the community and watching them grow as teens, I realized and heard from families that when they became adults, all those options were so wonderful and all the wonderful stimulation and acceptance that they had in their younger years sort of dissipated when they left school. The rest of the community, all those grown-ups who didn't go to camp with us, didn't have the sensitivity and the understanding and the welcoming attitude to embrace the people and to work opportunities. So we saw the need to find an opportunity to give an inclusive experience for people on-the-job training so that they were trained among people who don't have disabilities and could learn a specific specialized skill that could be transferred to work in another setting.
What are the regular employment expectations for grown-up sons and daughters with such disabilities?
I think a key thing is the word regular. I don't think anything's regular for anybody. So in terms, we all have expectations for all of our children, and they might be regular, but that might not be what ends up with our kids. So we just adjust the lens a little bit and start thinking of the talents and skills that an individual has, no matter whether they have special needs or not, and then start growing those skills and practicing those skills and developing those and start thinking, okay, now how can this be transferable? So we start with the most basic of skills that any person has and build on that to find a unique niche for that person to find a job that'll be meaningful and productive and possibly gainful.
How can concerned parents find out the level of trainability of an adult child with special needs? What kinds of jobs are appropriate? I'm wondering how people get the opportunity to work in Sunflower Bakery as an example.
Depending on the geographic area where people live, school systems are geared and mandated to work on transition from school to work. So that while children are still in school, once they get up to be 15, 16, 17 years old, and many of them are able to go to school till 21, they are already having some practice opportunities. So I would start from that point. Don't wait till 21 or 25. Start at 14 to start working with the school system and starting with pre-vocational kinds of opportunities. Then, depending on your location, funding is available through a Developmental Disabilities Administration in your given state, or there's federal money that comes to your state somehow to help you transition your son or daughter from school to work. In so doing, the first opportunities might not be the best. They might be what you always thought was going to be the case, but you have to, again, readjust the lens, go with where your son or daughter is, and work with many service providers who are happy to get the funding from the State Developmental Disabilities Administration to help you either get training or supported employment. And supported employment is something that's very important, because that means not only can a person have someone work with them perhaps as a job coach while they are training, but they can gradually transition to the job with a job coach who can help them adjust and learn that particular job's needs and boundaries so they can be successful there before just being kind of plopped into a position expected to make it and go.
So does every state have some kind of funding for that?
The state has the funding. How it's utilized, I can't tell you for each state. But they could start with the state. Let's say the state of Maryland has Developmental Disabilities Administration. Every state has something that addresses where that funding, how it goes through the pipeline, probably through their state's Health and Human Services Department.
How are the young people evaluated to be placed into these opportunities?
In our particular situation, they come from all different aspects. Some come straight from school, where we give the school a criteria for success in our setting. Other people come from a job placement agency where they've already been assessed in different areas and have shown the potential to be good at baking. The thing we have to watch out is a parent who says, he loves to cook at home, I'm sure he's going to be a great baker. The key is to go to the person who's applying and say, does this interest you? Do you really want to bake all day long every day, and are you ready to work really hard and stand on your feet for a long time? One thing that we know for sure is, the first and most important thing is motivation. So the person has got to be willing and interested in learning to do the tasks that are necessary to get a job in the baking industry. The second thing would be that their ability to stand and work in the environment safely is going to be a key. If someone has active seizures, it's not safe in a bakery. There's heavy equipment, hot oven doors, sharp knives. So we even had an experience with somebody who loved the teamwork and the socialization in the bakery, and even he agreed that his seizures were an impediment to being safe in the bakery. So he went on to do something that's going to be even more wonderful for him. And everybody has something that's perfect for them. But the other aspect would be someone who's safe emotionally and behaviorally, meaning they can deal with the frustrations of a batch of dough that doesn't come out right, and we just pitch it and start over. That's the wonderful thing about being in the bakery. You make a mistake, you just throw it out and start over. You haven't built an automobile that's, you know, thousands of dollars. You've done, you know, some few dollars worth of sugar and flour and eggs. But the frustration does occur. Equipment doesn't always work like it should. Having to wait your turn to use a specific piece of equipment in a small kitchen, working in a confined environment, some people can't cope with that. So if they cannot handle that, then they, and depending on the way that they express their frustration, could be a safety issue. So that would be one of the other things. Beyond that, it's really being able to have the fine motor coordination to use measuring cups and measuring spoons and equipment. So that would be a criteria that they feel they're successful with. Being able to take direction, and it can be broken down however it needs to be broken down. It doesn't matter. But that they are willing to accept direction and understand that they're working in a generalized environment. It will not be a sheltered situation where only people with disabilities are there. Because from day one, even coming into the training program, we're an inclusive environment.
Would you explain the term sheltered situation?
Sure. There are many programs where a room full of people who have a variety of disabilities sit and learn a task. It could be baking, for example. However, when someone is ready to go for employment, they're not going to be employed in an environment that only has people with disabilities. So they need to learn appropriate social interpersonal skills. They need to be able to control certain verbalizations or physical outbursts. If they need to expend energy rather than being able to pound or flap their hands or whatever, they might go for a walk outside or go into the other room so it's not unsafe for the people around them while they're doing it. We don't say don't do it. We say find a socially acceptable way to do it. They need to learn not to interrupt not to be able to make loud noises, because when people are working in an intense environment, working closely, measuring or concentrating, that could be really distracting to somebody else. They can have those behaviors. They need to learn to be able to excuse themselves and do that and come back in again. So we want people to learn how to be able to work within a, quote, normalized environment where expectations that anybody else would have would be on them as well, with accommodation. And that's, I think, the important thing that we learn about people and that we can share with employers.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on employment for adults with special needs.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We're talking with Sarah P. Milner about skills and employment for special needs adults.
How can parents be sure that if their grown-up child is taken into a job situation, that there's going to be appropriate accommodation, that people will understand and be able to work with them?
I think that would be a question that should be asked in any interview situation. Don't wait until they're already in the job situation. You asked what the unique characteristics of my son or daughter. This is a unique characteristic of my son or daughter. She can only stay focused for 10 minutes at a time. How do you plan to accommodate that in this work environment? The employer could say, we can't. Goodbye. Or they could say, well, what would you suggest? That'd be the best. The mom and the dad are the experts. They're the ones who raised the son or daughter for many years. They've learned the way to accommodate. So that would be an open invitation, and you would want to say to them, we would love to partner with you to help you accommodate my son or daughter. We want all of us to set them up for success.
What's the goal of the Sunflower Bakery?
We are giving people who ordinarily are not given opportunities the chance to work in a general environment, contributing a skill that is needed by an employer. They are learning to measure and weigh and do whole recipes. For those people who can't do a whole recipe and roll mandelbread, for example, and being able to have the loaves come out exactly right, we have people who are learning to scoop dough into balls to be prepared for future baking and know how to space it on the cookie sheet for either baking or for freezing, depending. We have people who are learning to package beautifully. And all of these are tasks that are needed by bakeries or other food industries. They're learning all of the public health requirements in terms of the safety and hygiene aspects of cleanliness and sanitation, working around food. These are all things that are transferable to other positions. So by training them in transferable skills that are needed in any bakery or food environment, the goal is then for them to go from being wherever they were before, come and learn some specific skills that can be transferred to another setting, to where they may have an internship, an extended volunteer placement, and eventually be paid for their employment, just like everybody else.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on employment for adults with special needs.
For an audio CD of any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Sarah P. Milner about skills and employment for special needs adults.
For those of you who are out there listening and can't see, smell, and taste what we can here in the studio, we have a beautiful, beautiful tray of assorted cookies here. And it really is as lovely as you would find at any really top-notch bakery.
I have to say, we're fine with people who come to our bakery as customers for the cause, because it's a wonderful cause, training people who have a variety of disabilities to be able to get gainful employment. But what we really work at hard is to have the best baked goods, so they'll come back for the product. And we pride ourselves in that, and it's something we ingrain in the trainees, that they should be very proud of their products. Our tagline is where caring is the main ingredient. And that carries from the second that a trainee interviews with us, that we care about them, to the minute that they become part of the team, that they need to care about their work, they need to care about our products, they need to care about our customers, and they need to care about making sure that the bakery runs smoothly.
How can a community get started on a project like the Sunflower Bakery?
We did it the hard way. We didn't start with a community. We started with two ladies who had this idea. I think it's much easier for a community because you can partner with existing agencies. There are agencies that provide a variety kinds of training to people already. There are also service providers who want to move people through training into employment and will support them. There are funders, public funders, who will give money to agencies to do these kinds of things. And I would suggest getting a team together that would include public and private partners, as well as individuals and private funders or philanthropists who are interested in helping out, because it will be a nonprofit experience. There is no way that this kind of a situation can turn a profit, because if we're really training like we're supposed to, we can't be producing competitively with the other commercial bakeries. We are professional and commercial bakery. We have this schizophrenic existence because we clearly are out there selling products. However, we are a training program, and that is our mission. And as that is our mission, it has to be subsidized and funded through other means other than selling our wonderful products.
What flags would you suggest watching for, both to start up and run something like this and also for parents who have a child going through this process?
I think you can never assume anything. And unfortunately, that's the role of a parent of even an adult child with special needs, that your antenna always have to be up. So that's what I would say to the parent. For the people who are trying to put the program together, I say in terms of red flags, proactive is so much easier than putting out fires later. So if you can get as many things in place before you start, you will ensure greater success. We have learned so much through the process. I guess another red flag is not to be discouraged and to just modify. Dealing with people who have special needs, whether they're children, adults, or somebody who breaks a leg in an accident, we always have to be flexible and accommodate. So I would say if you go in with an attitude of flexibility and willingness to overcome obstacles, then when red flags are waved, you say, okay, I see that. How, what am I going to do to get rid of it? How am I going to solve this problem? And just know that those things are going to come up. For example, in interviewing in our situation, when you're putting a team together, if you're hiring a chef to work in this environment, I'm going to make sure that the chef understands that we're not a professional pastry school, that we are training people who have disabilities, that they are coming to us because the other options do not exist. We would want to start from that point, for example. So in any kind of venture like this, you need sometimes a professional expert, who in our case is a professional baker. You do want to make sure that that person 100% owns into your mission and understands what you're talking about. Then you really have a team to work with when you're starting to move forward, because parents and other funders, they're all highly motivated. They want it to go. But if you have an expert, even if it's an auto mechanic, if you're working in the auto mechanics, make sure that person knows that they're not going to be popping those cars out, you know, at a fast pace and everything's going to be perfect. Some of our cookies don't look exactly like other ones, but they taste better than all the other ones. But eventually they look even more beautiful than other ones. And that's part of the thing, is to have the standards that are realistic expectations with the gold of expert.
Sarah, what was the most surprising outcome of this experience for you so far?
I am amazed almost every day at how much people who have been put in the situation of being dependent on others and having limited expectations placed on them and oftentimes limited opportunities, how much they really can do and grow and blossom when you find the niche that they just haven't had an opportunity to try before. We had a young woman who came to us at age 25. She went to public school through 21. And after that, for various reasons, with their dad's position, they came from the international community, was no longer able to participate in other job training programs, whatever. And her language communications were terrible. English was not her first language, but she has specific language disabilities, both expressive and receptive. And so even in the interview, I wondered if she was ever going to talk to us, because she talked very little. in our bakery, she is phenomenal with roll sugar cookie dough. She can cut any patterns and she can decorate magnificently. She's learned to communicate very well with her peers. She's well accepted by them. And they are all, you know, have varying levels of abilities. And she shows many strengths that probably, I mean, her mother came into Observer one time. She said, I never knew or dreamed she could ever do this. Yet she's amazing. And we are working on a job interview for her with the understanding with the employer that that will not be the highlight of their experience with her. The job trial will be the highlight of the experience with her because verbally, that's not going to make it for her, even in the interview. But when they see her work, they'll be thrilled.
Can a potential employer come to the bakery and see these people at work?
We strongly encourage it because I don't care how much I talk about it until somebody sees it in person. They really don't believe it. So, indeed, we encourage employers and potential employers to come by. We see employers as partners. We ask them, tell us what skills you specifically, what are the tasks in your specific place that you need? Now, they may have people who come to them because they couldn't get a job anywhere else or they lost their really great job in this current economy and they may hire that person, but we will give them a skilled person who is already trained to do that task and somebody who doesn't have the other opportunities. And when the economy changes, they're not going to be able to go back to their IBM job or wherever their, you know, commercial white-collar job. This is somebody who is going to be trained to do the best they can at these tasks.
How do you find employers who are going to be sensitive to this? This must be a very taxing job.
It is a very taxing job because it's not on their top of their to-do list. Mm-hmm. Their to-do list is you put an ad and let 40 people apply to you and you pick who you want. And we're saying we want to carve a job for somebody who has limitations in many areas but can do exactly what you need, exactly how you want, and will be extremely dependable and will value and honor this job and cherish the job as opposed to someone who's coming and saying, oh, couldn't get anything else. I'll just take this because I have to and I'll just do this.
And so how do you find these people? I mean, you look at all the ads that come out or do you do it by a network or how do you get these people?
All of the above, including when I'm standing in the grocery store and I say, where did you get your baked goods? And I take away a label or copy down a phone number or an address or an email and contact people. So we've gone from everyone from bankers who advise us on their customers who might be possibilities to people who say, I shop at such and such and the person's so nice there, you ought to go talk to that person. Any way, how, we try creative alternatives, somebody's cousin's brother's uncle, anything to contact and locate those people.
You gave us a wonderful story about this young woman who started with you at 25. Do you have other stories that you'd like to share?
Every single person who's with us has a story, a much longer story, because the sad parts were all before us. Because now that they're with us, they're really thrilled to be there. They're happy to come to work every day. And again, I tell you, people work very hard sometimes standing for 3.5 hours without stopping. It's wonderful. One, a young lady, just the other day stopped me. She said, can I speak to you? And I said, yes. And she's 21. She tried college and really could not get through the acceptance part. She applied to work in the Army, failed the Army admissions program. She has language disabilities, mild Asperger's, and significant math problems. And she said, Sarah, why are you so nice to me? And I said, what? She said, I'm not used to people telling me that I've really done something well and that they appreciate what I'm doing. And I said, but you're really good at that. She said, But you're always so nice about it. And I said, there's no reason not to. You're wonderful and you're doing a great job. And I wish that she was sort of exaggerating, but as we've gotten to know her through her life, you know, we see that she's got really some significant baggage that she's brought with her. And we're the highlight. Where she came to us originally in her interview, it was, I want to join the Army. Maybe by being able to bake, that would make a reason why they'd want to hire me. To, I'm not going for the Army. I'm not going for college now. I really want to be a great baker. And that's a very realistic goal for her.
Some of our listeners will want to pursue some of the issues we've been discussing further. What resources would you suggest for them?
I would could start with their local governments. They probably, again, if their kids have come through a school system and they are adults now, they've been given some direction and some places to go. And while maybe they resisted some of the other referrals initially, just call up and get information. Go onto your county's website and see what support services they have for employment for people with disabilities or for job training for people with disabilities. Go to that same website or the state to find out what funding is available for either the support for the person, transportation to the place, any other issues that would be related to making it possible for a person to get to work and be at a work or get to a training program and be in a training program. So I would start with that first because those are sort of the easiest and most obvious. If somebody's particularly interested in baking, a couple of interesting sites to visit would be the Sugar Plum Bakery in Virginia Beach, Virginia. You can see another bakery, a very big, and it's over 20 years old now, that's been operating successfully. They were the little tiny spark that someone saw and heard about that got us going. Also, Bread Makers is a video that was made in Edinburgh, Scotland, that won all kinds of awards at film festivals. There's no narration. It just shows people with disabilities baking bread. It's an awesome video, and you might enjoy Googling that and looking up Bread Makers, part of Garvald Industries and baking in Edinburgh, Scotland. In addition to that, again, service providers are eager to talk to you and help you get involved because they would get the funding to help you do so. And you can find those by Googling your county, job support, job coaching, supported employment. Those are some terms with your county and see what comes up. And if you're interested in knowing more information about Sunflower Bakery, our email is thesunflowerbakery@gmail.com. We have a website under construction in that we got a grant as a nonprofit. We got a grant that allowed us to do this. We have our purchasing ability and our online ability to charge an order from beautiful product listing up. We're going to be adding more and more information to the site about us. In the meantime, you can go to www.sunflowerbakery.org to get a glimpse of us and more to come. Watch that site. Check it regularly.
Well, this has been obviously a most informative interview, and we have special thanks to Sarah Milner for sharing her experience and expertise about this important issue of employment for adult children with special needs. Thank you so much, Sarah.
You're welcome.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of The Little Book, a collection of stories, articles, parenting tips, and resources for all parents and caregivers, especially those who love and care for children and teens with special needs. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 461, and please tell us if you can what station you're listening to.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the Joseph and Anna Smith Foundation. Our sound engineer is Mark Vitelli. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.